Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
I've never told you this before, but I don't think I've actually told anyone before. I'm seeing my culture being diluted throughout the years. When I went back to Ireland after being in the UK for 2 years, I was in shock because I couldn't believe how racist Ireland was. He literally just banged my hand into the traffic light button and just looked at me, and no one said anything. No one is going to pick me because no one's actually going to like me. Like, not you, who was bullying me about my lips getting lip filler. I'd be so frustrated, and there was days that, like, I would leave the office, walk around the block and just cry. Oh my god. I don't think anyone actually knows the struggle.
I have a legend with me on the couch, guys. I've been wanting to get this guest for a very long time. One of my favorite islanders. Like, this intro is going to be a long intro. Sorry, it's going to be a long intro. One of my favorite islanders. I'm so happy that she's with me, sitting right beside me, guys. We have the legend that is Yawande Biala, guys.
Not the legend.
The legend.
What an intro.
Can I just say it? Yawande babes, guys. Clap for Yawande babes. Woo! I'm so happy that Yawande is here. Yawande babes. Listen, all the way back in 2019, the OG.
Yawande babes. Yawande babes. Yawande babes. Yawande babes. Yawande babes.
Baby! Yawande is there. Sorry, I'm just so happy. I've been grinning cheek to cheek.
Oh, what an intro.
Woo! What an intro. Not me. Okay, let me shut up. But still, I'm just so happy.
I can't stop smiling.
I know. I'm so happy that you're here. How have you been?
I've been good. I mean, I'm alive. I'm kicking.
No, you're saying I'm alive.
I'm alive. But yeah, I've been good.
You look beautiful. I love these little rings.
Colorful rings. Yeah.
Where are they from?
I have no idea, actually.
You know when you put someone on the spot? And you just go blank. That is me.
I think I got them like for gifting. So I'm not actually sure what brand it is.
How has your week been? How's your...
It's been good. I haven't really done much this weekend other than work.
Just working.
Work meetings. And that's it. Very boring week. I feel like my life isn't interesting.
I feel like it is.
I don't think so.
I feel like your life is very interesting. Sorry, I'm just standing. I'm partially standing here. This is somebody that I've wanted from day one. Everybody knows that Yawande was one of the first few people on Love Island when I started reviewing that I just genuinely loved you on the show from day one. And when you came out, and I remember you messaged me saying, thank you for supporting me.
Yeah.
And then I saw you at your event.
I love him so much. He's actually like, oh, I can't thank you enough.
Yawande babes, this legend. What goes around comes around.
And then your mum was there as well. And
it's so funny because I think I've never told you this before, but I don't think I've actually told anyone before. But when I first came out, I was like so terrified to turn on my phone. So I didn't actually turn on my phone for 2 or 3 days. But what I did do while I was in Mallorca to ease myself was to go on YouTube. So
right.
YouTube was the first thing I typed in my name just to, you know, ease myself into life. And your video was like one of the first videos.
Not easing all my videos, don't
I? Your videos was the first few ones that I watched. And I remember thinking, oh my god, because anytime you spoke about something, I was like, oh my god, he gets it. Like, that was so true. Like, this happened. It's exactly like
right.
this. And it was so comforting. And my mom absolutely loves you. Like, I know she's watching this, and I know she's gonna pause this right now. Call my brothers and sisters upstairs and be like, oh my god, like she's talking about me, but like she loves this show, like your YouTube so much.
I don't know what it is with the mums.
Alright, Bella. Fucking do it.
What?
I knew it.
What a waste, man. What a waste, man. What a waste, man. What a waste, man. Oh my God.
The mums, I think yours was first as well. And then I remember at your event, a lady just tapped me on the shoulder. I'm thinking, who? Like, I turned around and she's like, I'm your one day's mum. So I was thinking, wow, like the mothers are really watching. Because normally, you know, yeah. Like, I think parents, they don't watch YouTube like that. Mm. Or like, they're not on it yeah. like that. They just watch their shows or programs on TV.
Yeah.
So for me to see like ethnic parents watching or following or appreciating in any way was amazing. Yeah. Like, it was amazing to me. So shout out to your one day's mum. Big shout out to your one day's mum. Big shout out to your one day's mum. So we've got a lot to talk about. I wanted to just discuss a lot with you.
Okay.
And obviously we're gonna start off with your journey on Love Island.
Okay.
And when you came onto the show and everything, I just thought that even though you weren't there for a very long time,
yeah.
you were very impactful. Like, I feel like the theme of this podcast for me is, again, composure. I feel like you are very composed. I feel like you were very mature for your age at the time, because it was 2019 now, we're in 2022. And I feel like you did so well. So with your experience on the show, what kind of advice would you give? Because we've seen the lineup now for the new season starting tomorrow. What would you give to the ethnic girls? Well, in this season, it's just the black girls out OG. Like, what would you give as advice if they were sitting right here?
I think I'd say, don't think too much, because right. I think as like someone from any ethnic minority group going on Love Island, you feel like you have to represent.
There's pressure.
There's a lot of pressure. And I think it dilutes your experience, because at the end of the day, there's these other contestants who are only worried about having a great time.
Right.
Who are only worried about having like the crack and like not really thinking too much about it. And it's like, if I could do it again, or if I could give someone any advice, I would say, just have so much fun,
right?
Because apart from like everyone on the outside loving Love Island and it's a great show, it's at the end of the day, it's a great experience for you. You're never going to be able to live those couple of days, weeks, hours, how many days you get on. So it's like, just like live. And just, I know it's so sad because they can't watch it, but if you're going in and you're watching this YouTube video or wherever, if you're listening to the podcast, just enjoy every single second of it. Don't overthink anything. Like, everyone's not gonna like you. Nobody might like you. It might be shit, but you'll make amazing friends, and just enjoy every
moment. I feel like your journey to me was impactful. So I feel like that advice, that's why I thought I'd ask you that question, because you're also an OG.
Yeah.
An OG, guys. Like, I love how I'm an OG. Sorry. I love how you just clapped when I clapped. It's just so funny. I don't even tell him to do that. Sorry. But back to Love Island. That's not like your season was the best.
Thank you.
Like, it was the best. So I feel like with the show, the other seasons that have come out, I don't think that they're up to par with season 5. I think your journey was the best season. So if I went on season 5, I'd be like, oh, well, like, I've done it, babe. I've done Love Island. Sorry. Like, who's this? I don't know who you are. Sorry. Like, Love Island hasn't been that, whatever. There was just a few parts that I thought that you were hilarious. Like, I feel like you threw shade in a very effortless manner, and you're very composed. Like, when you brought Arabella and Danny together and you're like to Danny, am I right or am I wrong? Like,
am I right or am I wrong?
No,
I'm not trying to be rude.
That scene is hilarious. And then on the reunion as well, like, you just kind of just dragged him in such a funny way. So first of all, I felt like you were composed, but you bought such a good sight to the way you reacted to stuff, and you were just funny with it. And the shade was just so like effortless. It was just like it rolled off your tongue. Like, it was just so funny. Have you seen yourself back on the show?
I've watched like little clips here and there on that I've seen on Twitter, but I don't think I've actually watched the whole.
Right. I think a lot of people say this.
Because it's so cringy. Because you kind of like, I know what I've done. I was there. I lived it. Woke up, went to bed. I was there.
So why do I need to watch it?
So why do I need to watch it?
Would you, if they were like, apparently the executive producer said they want to do an All Stars, would you go on that?
I don't think they would.
I don't see how it would work.
I don't think they would, because
see, you're very, sorry, I'm interrupting you, but you're very, I feel like the comments you make, it happens. And I feel like one thing, for example.
Ooh, not me speaking things into.
Really, really, you do. Because I remember I did a video on this as well. Like, after your season ended, Love Island Winter was announced.
Yeah.
And then you were like, oh, I'm sure this was true, but I saw in papers that you said that I don't see it
yeah.
doing what it needs to do. And that season was diabolical. Like, I was in tears. Like, I genuinely was in tears. It was just such a shambles. So I feel like, I was like, oh, you only said this. So I feel like you have good commentary on future projects
yeah.
of the show.
I don't think it would work, only just because if all the OGs were single and some people weren't married or hadn't had kids, it maybe would work. Mm. But now it's like, the reason Love Island did so well was because it was like random people who had basic ass jobs, who weren't special, went into this like bubble, found love in the most amazing, unique, like adorable way, right? And then now we're all influencers, celebs, or in the public eye. People know who we are. It's like, do you really want me to fall in love again when you know that I'm not going to be again. There for genuine reasons? Do you know what I mean? Like, if anyone did Love Island again, it's not to find love. And we all know that. I know that. The people watching know that. Like, yeah. It doesn't make any sense.
It doesn't make any sense. I think it just sounds amazing.
It sounds great.
Because you want to see your favorites on TV again.
Yeah,
but
definitely.
Logistically, doesn't make any sense.
We would all know what to do. Like, it makes no sense.
Absolute no sense. Now that you put it that way, I feel like it makes sense the way you said it. Now, Ywanda is an author.
Not a author.
Not published author.
No, I said like not a published author. Like, you know, the way, like not a.
Oh, okay, cool. But, oh. I was just like, let me not make any mistakes or leak anything.
No, I am.
Before announcements.
I
was just thinking, I do not want to do that. I was just thinking, okay.
No, I'm
She's a whole author, babes.
Yeah.
A whole author.
And can I also say, ghostwriters were involved. Because a lot of people can say that. And it makes me, I'm really proud of that fact that like, I can literally stand and be like, no, every single word in that book was written by me in my bedroom or in my publication house office.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Before we get into this book, the link for the book will be in the bio below and it will be the first link to be seen.
Aww.
Just want to let you guys know that. So, and it's available to pre-order when?
It's available to pre-order now.
Now.
And pre-orders are so important for an author. So please pre-order the book.
Buy that book, guys. Reclaiming, pre-order it now via Amazon. The link is below in the video. Just wanted to put that there.
Thank you.
So in terms of inspirations for this book, I feel like, you know, there were some experiences on the show as well where we had an individual who would refuse to pronounce your name in certain ways and other individuals who would, you know, their reactions were very weird to me giving flowers.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads, generally for most people, are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
And whatever, none of it made sense to me.
Yeah.
So I feel like when you spoke about that, again, very composed.
Yeah.
You were very much, this is what happened. I'm going to talk about it. Case closed. And I feel like you've spoken about it very clearly, so we don't need to really go into that. But with that whole experience, how did that really influence you when it comes to your book, Reclaim It?
I think when I put out that statement, when that incident happened, it was something that I had to, because I know I'm someone who likes to think a lot before I speak. Mm. And I'm very careful with my words. And maybe that's why I come across sometimes as very quiet, because I observe a lot.
Yeah, I can tell.
Speak very quickly.
Yeah.
I take my time and I think first. So when I put out my little statement, it was something that I actually wrote like during the night. And it was something I really thought about. I analyzed the statement and then I put it out there. And it was so important for me not to include anyone's name in that statement, because for me, it was a conversation that needed to happen. It was like, I went through an unfortunate incident and this is why I'm speaking about it. But as a society, when it comes to like racialized renaming, ascribing people nicknames, or, you know, dismissing names that are not like Eurocentric or not normative names,
right,
we don't tend to speak about it. And as someone from like an ethnic minority, with what people would think is a complicated name, I've had names ascribed to me, I've had people mock my name because of it, and it's something we never really speak about. We just kind of normalize it. And it's really sad, because the way I see it is, I had so many incidents growing up of people mocking my name or ascribing me nicknames that, like, I started thinking that, I remember I said to my mom when I went home, I was like, no, when I have kids, like, I'm going to give them normative names and European names. And it's really sad, because what you see is dilution of culture. Mm. And it's just really sad, because it's kind of like, I'm seeing my culture being diluted throughout the years. And it's like,
lot, right?
We need to speak about it. Like, it's a bigger issue and people don't really see that. So I wrote an article for The Independent, and
which was fantastic.
Yeah, a lot of people like loved it.
It was a great article.
And I never seen myself as a writer. I loved English in school. Never seen myself as a writer. I think when you're from a Nigerian background, STEM is the only thing that is offered to you. It's my only option. Didn't really have anything else. And I loved English, but I never seen writing as a career or journalism or anything like that. So when people said to me, no, you're a really talented writer, I couldn't believe it. I was like, what even is a talented writer? And then I wrote another article on colorism for The Independent. And again, that was amazing. They said, right, like, the numbers were great. And I was like, okay. And then I started having meetings about book deals, and
one after the other.
Yeah, one after the other.
But this is the thing. I think you said you don't feel like a writer. But
yeah.
Well, like, when you're speaking from your chest,
yeah,
and your heart, and
yeah,
you're like, you're not faking any of this. It's, yeah, your genuine experiences.
Yeah.
Then the pen is just going to flow.
Mm.
And the ideas will just naturally come out. So
yeah,
in those articles, there's only been a matter of time until you came out with a book.
Yeah.
So I feel like, you know, yes, these incidents, of course, Love Island isn't just the one incident. I'm sure you've had incidents similar to this throughout your lifehood,
yeah,
as, you know, many ethnic people do, black or brown or wherever people are from. And I feel like it all just kind of influenced you, and that was just another incident. And I feel like you responded great to it. Fantastic. And I feel like you've used that, and you've brought out this amazing book. And now you're going to obviously help other people,
yeah,
especially young individuals who are going through institutions,
yeah,
and, you know, they can read this and they can be very much inspired by it,
yeah,
because it's coming from, it's just truth. Like, it's just genuine. Like, people can tell it's truth.
Yeah.
So I feel like you responded to that great. And you've, from that, you've also, you've created such a beautiful form of art. And it's felt like it's been a while since you've been writing this,
yeah,
but you don't rush art.
Yeah. You don't, but when you have a deadline, ooh.
Ooh, not the deadline.
Ooh, not the
deadline.
Deadlines are whopping my ass. So I started writing officially in July. I got my book deal.
July last year.
I got my book deal in, I think I want to say like March, but I don't think I announced it to like maybe like May or I think around May time. I started writing in July, and it's so funny because even some of my friends would say, yeah, well, but how do you start a book? Like, we know how you write, but like, how do you actually start? Like, how does it form into like chapters,
right,
and then paragraph and then a book?
And it's a lot, man.
It's a lot. And it was hectic, because what would happen is I'd go into the publishing house and we had to agree on what chapters would actually even go into the book. And that actually took a lot of time. And even writing the book, I would like sit down in the office and spider diagram, basics, spider diagrams. I'd ask myself questions like, how do I want the reader to feel when they read this? What notes do I want them to pick up? How do I want to sound as an author? What points do I want them to take away? And I'd ask myself those questions over and over and over again. And when I had the answers, I'd jot them down. And then I think of structure.
Right.
And then I think of monologue. What monologues am I going to include to make my point? How can I make this more personal? And then I would write my chapter around that. And usually I think most authors would hand in a draft of a full finished book. But what I did was handed in essays of each chapter, because I was a first time writer and I didn't know if I was, what I was doing was right. Can you imagine finishing the book? And then my editor is like, no. Do you know what I mean? So I handed it
by
chapter.
Okay,
yeah.
That makes sense. So that you're taking
it formed into what it is now.
Into a beautiful book, like your whole published author.
I can't believe it.
That's crazy.
I know, isn't it?
That is crazy.
Thought?
You were doing, you're, I feel like you're a scientist as well, correct? Scientist, yes. Published author, content creator, like what can't you and they do? Astronaut, next.
Not, okay. Not an astronaut.
Are you flying to the moon? Are you flying to the moon? Next year, family, one day is flying with NASA. I'm talking about it now. No, I'm joking. But like, I just feel like you could do it all. Oh, and of course, you one day gave me an exclusive.
I did.
She sent me an exclusive to her book. And I felt like that specific chapter, it was one of many, but there were so many different like scenarios that people can relate to. Yeah. So you spoke about, you know, your childhood and growing up and like in your primary school, and people were like, oh, you know, why is your nose this wide? Are your lips this? And that's when you first start questioning stuff.
Yeah.
When you're such a young child, and it's just like subconsciously engraved. It grows such bigger as well as consciously. And then you spoke about you know, when you're at the hairdressers and you know, Instagram and the Kardashians. And then you also spoke about at, you know, when you're at these influencer events and that somebody's talking about blackfishing and they're saying, I can't believe I did that. So, and I'm just like, really? Like, like, really? Like, there is so, I remember even I saw this like Asian girl, South Asian girl, she did a TikTok and she was like, oh, people say I look like Kylie Jenner. I have my face, Kylie Jenner bought it. So, and you know, and you have a lot of white girls specifically who have changed so much that you just think that that's how they look like, but that's not actually not true.
Yeah.
And it's actually where they get this from, black and brown girls. And it's just crazy how there was so much to relate to in that chapter.
Yeah.
So beautiful.
Thank you.
Absolutely beautiful. Especially when it comes to the primary school stuff, because that is what hit me as well. Because when you have kids that say stuff to you, oh, you look like, why did you, like, my nose was too big or something like that. You just really sit in the mirror and you look at yourself.
Yeah.
And you're just like, why am I not the way that other people think I am?
Yeah.
So what, like, in terms of writing these chapters, was it difficult for you to do that?
I think it was funny because when I started writing, my editor was like, oh, if you ever need someone to talk to or you feel like you need to put yourself in therapy, let me know.
Right, because it's a lot,
and
man.
I laughed. The first time I laughed and I was like, oh, it's going to be fine. Like, it's not even that deep. And the minute I started writing, I was like, no. I was like, no, I definitely need help because I think as a writer, you really need to, especially when you're writing nonfiction, you need to sometimes live those experiences back again because you have to write about them so vividly. And sometimes you think you're healed and then you find out you're really not. So even with some of my chapters, for example, mental health, which I know you haven't read, is probably one of my most open chapters in the entire book. Like, even reading that chapter back when I was even correcting it or editing it, I would just cry the whole time. I could not read that chapter without crying. But I think as an author, sometimes you need to give your audience that vulnerability. I feel like you owe it to them. There's no point talking about mental health, body image, colorism, things like this, and not being open. It's like, What are you writing about?
But right, it must have been very difficult to be vulnerable when you're reserved.
Yeah.
As a person.
Yeah. I find it funny because even though when I was writing, I felt like no one was going to read it. Because when you're in your room and you're in the office and you're writing and only your editor is reading this, you don't ever think that anyone else is going to read it. So I think it was easier being open because it was just me, my laptop, and a blank piece of paper. And that was it. So it was easy to do that. And because I was in therapy
right
at that time when I wrote my whole book, so the whole time I was writing my book, I was in and out of therapy, made it a little bit easier to open up. But now I find myself like in my sitting room laughing to myself or being so anxious now because I know that like the book is going out in a couple of weeks and it's like, shit, like people are gonna read this.
It's actually coming to that point now.
Yeah, and it's scary.
So how, I'm moving a little bit away from the book, but we're gonna get back into it, but how was, because you growing up as a black girl in Ireland,
yeah,
how the hell was that? Like,
you know what,
was it as difficult as people think, or was it as not easy but not as bad as people yeah. make out to be?
I think it's, so I'll answer it in two parts. While I was living in Ireland, I didn't think it was as bad as it was because I think okay. it's all I knew. So I'm living in this place and that's all I know. I don't know anything else. I've never lived anywhere else in my life. So I can just tell you from my experience that like, yeah, there was obviously racism, but it's all you know, right? But then when I moved to the UK, and of course, Ireland is not as diverse as the UK.
Right.
So when I moved to the UK, it was different. There was more diversity.
When did you move to the UK?
2019.
Okay, post-Love Island.
Yeah, so post-Love Island, moved to the UK, more diversity. Obviously, there is still racism, but
right.
it's a different type of
a softer
race.
Cushion.
It's a, yeah, yeah.
We'll put it that way.
And when I went back to Ireland after being in the UK for 2 years... I was in shock because I couldn't believe how racist Ireland was compared to the UK. Because I'd been living in it and I didn't know anything else, it was all I knew.
Mm.
But when I came back here and I went back, I remember I couldn't believe it. Like it was just the subtle microaggressions that like I wouldn't necessarily notice before until I left and came back. Like I went to a friend's wedding about 2 months ago, and I was sitting down with all my friends who I went to university with. Like we lived basically together for 4 years and we worked together post uni, and it was things like, oh, you would only know if you were Irish, or yeah, but this is what Irish people are like. And I just sat there and just thought, well, I've lived here all my life, like I would have thought that I was Irish. But here are my friends, like my actual friends, sitting down, looking me in my eye, saying, you would only know if you were Irish, or this is what Irish people are like. And I was taken back because I mightn't have noticed these things. I don't think I would have noticed if I didn't leave and come back.
Mm.
It was different. It was like a different, it was a, the microaggressions were just different. And even the racism, it was like, I don't know. It was like I left and just came back and it was like more racist. Like
yeah,
I was at a traffic light minding my own business, pressing the traffic light, waiting for the little green man to come on. And some guy literally just like, he literally just banged my hand into the traffic light button and just looked at me and no one said anything. In another incident, I was minding my business in city centre. I had like bags, I was shopping. And some guy just pushed me and no one on the street said anything. Like everyone was just minding their business.
Wow.
And no one came up
that, though.
And said,
I hate
are
that.
You okay?
I hate that when no one around
nobody.
Says anything.
But I was in shock because it's like these things never happened before I left. And I was like, am I just noticing it now that I've left and moved back? Like I knew it was racist, but oof.
I think because of the different settings. And you're just now comparing them.
Yeah.
Because obviously you went to London and then obviously you come back and you visit your family yeah. and so forth and
yeah.
you see it. Because that must have been crazy. Because my upbringing, like, it's interesting because everybody in my primary school, they were just like different colours. Everybody was just different colours. And then in my secondary school, everybody was Nigerian. Or Ghanaian.
Yeah.
At best. And you know, some Caribbean there. So that's just what I grew up with. And then when I went to college, you know, the majority was white. And then I saw that kind of, you know, I had those issues. But throughout, it was just the ethnic complete. And I feel like there's a lot of Nigerians in London anyways.
Yeah.
But I just find it interesting when I have friends or people that grew up in either Kent or grew up in Ireland or up north and they're from a Nigerian Ghanaian background and they just talk about seclusion or isolation or we didn't have that many people that look like us. And I'm just like, where I went to London, everybody, it's just so interesting how it works.
No, and completely different.
It's so different.
School, I was the only black girl in my school.
See, that's mind-blowing to
and
me.
And then, yeah, and then, like, during the last year of primary school, another black girl moved into, but she wasn't even in my class. That was my primary school.
I mean, obviously, it's Ireland and London. It's not really mind-blowing. But like, I'm saying mind-blowing like that. But, like, it's just interesting because, like, for example, one of my peers when I was a young black girl, and she taught me how to read. Mm-hmm. And I was helping her to read. And they were, like, at least, like, half the class was diverse. So growing up in London as a child is very different as somebody who's ethnic and growing up somewhere else, obviously. But when you actually just talk about it, it's so interesting.
I find it interesting how it went from, like, covert racism when I was growing up, and then now being older, it's more overt. Like, I'm still trying to piece together how it happened.
It's very covert, because I remember I went on a internship working in psychiatric hospitals, part of my degree for cognitive neuroscience, and I went to work in Sri Lanka, and there was a group of us, majority of them were white, I think they all were apart from me and this one brown girl. Now everybody thought that me and her were intimate. Everyone thought that me and her were intimate, were having sex or something. And I'm just thinking, the higher reason you're saying this, because we're just both brown.
Yeah, yeah.
And you paired us together out of the group of white. I'm thinking, and it was just very covert, because if I was white, you wouldn't be
saying that
at all. And it's just interesting when you look back at it. So that's why it's like, there's one way of you writing your book, but then another way of writing a book is that you're probably rehashing memories that you've obviously been through that were quite significant, and then it just brings a lot of like emotional turmoil in any kind of way that you express. But that's why it just, like, you just rethink situations that you went through, thinking, hang on a minute, that shouldn't have happened. Like, it's very interesting. And then the racialized renaming stuff in college, people, it was like, oh, Murad is too long, can I call you Moo? Am I a cow? Like, am I a cow, guys? I don't understand. We're not on a farm. Like, oh, you know, can I call you Moo? And they would just call me Moo, or like Moo or something, I think. And I'm thinking, you've now turned my name into Moo, which is probably like 5-6 letters. Anyways, my name is, if you can pronounce Daenerys Targaryen of Game of Flipping Thrones, you know how to pronounce my name. That's why I always used to think. But I realized that they wanted to pronounce those names on those shows, but they don't care about ethnic names.
Yeah.
So they just didn't care.
Yeah.
And the disrespect is crazy.
Yeah, the dismissal, I never really got it, because it was like, obviously now looking back and being able to break it down, it was more about power control, wasn't it?
Right.
Because, like, you have that power in telling me how I want to be addressed. And every time you address me the wrong way or you make fun of my name, you know how that makes me feel.
Right.
And then there's always that smile when they say it wrong or they call you the wrong name or ascribe you a nickname. It's always done with like this smirk.
Yeah.
And they laugh after, because they know what they're doing and they have that power in how you want to be addressed.
It's just crazy, because I never used to correct people. I don't know if you did.
I did.
I never correct people growing up. I just thought that, okay, I don't want to cause a fuss.
Yeah.
Call me what you want. It is what it is. Yeah. Like, whatever. But I never did.
So it took me time, but like...
Right. Now I do.
Yeah.
Like, people say, oh, Moo or Murad. I'm like, no, my name's pronounced Murad.
Yeah.
That is it.
Yeah, I think secondary school was when I think I put my foot down and said, no. Every single time someone got it wrong, I wouldn't even get angry. I would just correct them every single time until they got it right.
Interesting. And did you receive, do people listen to you? Or
there were eye rolls.
Right.
There is definitely those eye rolls, like, yeah, whatever, like, I know, what do you know what I mean, like, let's just keep it moving. But like, I think being Nigerian, sometimes you just have no shame,
right?
Like, Nigerians sometimes actually have no shame. Like, I didn't care. I was like, sorry, like,
me, not wanting to cause a fuss. Listen, you will do as I told.
Yeah, but if you don't correct people, they'll never change.
They will.
So it's up to you.
It really is up to you. It was, and then other parts of your book, when you said, oh, you know, you're staring. I feel like your book is very relatable.
See, this is the thing. When I remember being in a meeting with my agent, and one of the questions she asked me was, who's your book for? Who are you writing for? And I said, everyone. And she looked at me and she was like, you can't write for everybody. And I said, no, I think I'm writing, and you'll see it in the other chapters. I said, no, I do feel like I'm writing for everyone. Reclaiming, I think a lot of people think it's for like specifically the Black community, which it is, but right. I think reclaiming is for everyone who has ever lost a tiny bit of themselves, who have been forced into normalized boxes or boxes they feel like they don't belong in. And I think in everyone's life that has happened at some point in their life, so I think reclaiming is for everyone. And I'm so happy that you think that it's relatable, because
it's really so relatable, especially that scene when you were at the hairdressers and
looking in the mirror.
That's what I used to do all the time, like as a hairdresser, not as a hairdresser, but obviously when I was getting my hair cut or something like that, and like they're cutting your hair. I know it's obviously our experiences are going to be very different.
Yeah, I would like to think so.
Yeah, not me getting a lace front or something.
Not me getting a trim, a fade at the side.
Can you imagine? I feel like sure it would suit you though.
No,
I feel like sure
everyone
would
says
you.
That, but ooh, child, don't.
Anyways, not the fact we're laughing about this is so funny. But I used to just look in the mirror, like when they're cutting my hair, whatever. And used to be like, I have always felt like I'm not good looking enough. I don't know. Really? Yeah, I've always thought that. Not this being a therapy session. But like, I've always thought that I'm like ugly from day one. And I feel like it's because you see these models growing up. I know as a man and as a woman, it's very different. Mm. And as other, communities that are going through it. But you see these like models on like Top Man back in the day and everything like this. The majority of them are white and whatever. And you just don't feel like you look like that.
Yeah.
And you don't look like what is normal growing up in a country like London. Even though London was very diverse, London was very diverse. You still always have that. So I always should think to myself, and even now, and it's interesting because growing up, you're not attractive, or you're not deemed attractive, whatever. And now I do get a lot of attention. I can't lie to you guys. I cannot lie. The attention I get is absolutely mad.
Love that for you.
I'm not gonna lie. Let me just toot my own horn. But the attention is actually mad. But even though I get a lot of attention, I don't acknowledge it.
Yeah.
Because of how I was, when you're treated as like, oh, you're not good looking enough, or you're ugly, or this, that, and you're comparing yourself to what actually is deemed beautiful,
yeah.
And then you suddenly get attention as you get older, you don't process it.
Yeah.
And it just doesn't. I'm just like, sorry, like, okay, if someone said I'm good looking, at one ear out the other. I mean, it goes in that ear and I love it, but as in it goes out the ear. And I'm just like, so that's why I thought like your book was so relatable in so many, even it's just one chapter and I'm still talking about it.
Yeah, but I love that.
The layers of the chapter was like crazy when you're staring about this and you're talking about the conversation that you overhear from other hairdressers talking about, wanting to get BBLs and stuff like this and how people shouldn't be doing this. Like, people overhear stuff like that. So it's very, very relatable. So you should be very, very proud of yourself.
Thank you.
It was a great chapter, especially when it comes to the BBLs and the Kardashians and how much they have changed society, especially on Instagram. Mm. Like, I was in Dubai recently and I saw guys with BBLs.
Oh, yeah. Well, I've seen a few. I've seen a few.
As in one cockroach. And you're going into the damn taxi and I'm thinking, and they were really struggling to get in the taxi, as in they were holding onto every bar of their life to get in there because their rear end was huge. And I'm just thinking, I don't understand it, but each their own.
Yeah.
But crazy, and especially as a girl.
Step onto the legendary clay courts of Roland Garros, where the world's best players battle it out for a chance to win the French Open title. Tennis Channel Plus is your place to watch. Stream every court from your phone or smart TV, live in HD. Don't miss a moment with daily live coverage and match replays on demand, beginning Monday, May 20th. Be there for all the unforgettable moments. Stream now with Tennis Channel Plus.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Black girl, it must be even more pressure.
Yeah.
So how did you deal with that when it came to coming out of Love Island? Because you came out on the biggest season.
Mm.
No other season has been as big. So the pressure is even more.
Yeah.
And then, of course, you know, you're getting deals, or you're going to these shoots, or you're, you know, these, you're getting clothes for lingerie stuff, and you're going to photo shoots, which was also in your book.
Yeah.
How did you, and how are you coping with that?
I think, kind of like you said, like growing up, I never felt like I was pretty.
Yeah.
I never felt beautiful because
never.
I never seen myself.
Mm.
Like, I never seen myself represented ever. You know, there's always these magazines with, like, you know, the world's most beautiful woman, and it was like always like some blonde hair, blue eyes type of girl. So I never, and obviously growing up in Ireland where there wasn't a lot of black people, so there wasn't enough representation anyways, I just never thought I was pretty. So going on a show like Love Island was actually so challenging. Because I went in and I told my friend, and I even told people in work, I was like, I will be back tomorrow.
Because tomorrow.
Because no one is going to pick me because no one's actually going to like me. Like, I had already, like, prepared myself. And even before you go on a show like that, you have, like, therapy sessions. And one of the questions they asked me was, what was your biggest fear? And I said that no one will like me, but I kind of already know that, so I'm dealing with it now as opposed to dealing with it while I'm on the show,
right?
And 6 million people watching. And it's really sad because I feel like a lot of black people and a lot of ethnic minorities kind of go through the same journey with body image. And growing up, well, I still do have big lips, but I feel like I grew into my lips.
Mm.
If you seen me 15 years ago, I feel like my lips were my face. Like, my features were so prominent because I was still growing up. I was still a baby. And having to deal with, like, the bullying because of my features, the same features now that are being stolen.
Right.
It was something that was interesting to me. You know, I think people started getting fillers probably about like 7, maybe 8 years ago.
Yeah, that was around the starting point.
Yes, a couple, 7, 8 years ago. And it was mind-blowing to me because I remember thinking,
not mind-blowing.
Not you. Not you who was bullying me about my lips getting lip filler.
Right.
I was like, not this. But I think obviously taken away from that, there is like a serious issue with body image, blackfishing, and also surgery. And I think I said it in my book that, like, even I talked about, like, fat phobia. In my book as well. Because I think growing up, I used to watch shows like The Swan, The Biggest Loser, all these makeover shows. And from a young child, I was indoctrinated with this idea that thinner was beautiful.
Oh yeah, The Biggest Loser.
That's what we watched.
That's
all we seen.
That name though isn't this,
that would never run now.
The Biggest
Loser. That
would loser.
Never run now.
So the less weight you lost, you are the biggest loser. I think that was the aim of the show, right?
Yeah, I think it was. You had to lose. Anyway, I think you were given like a target every week.
Yeah, I used to watch that show.
And you had I love that show.
Wow. Yeah, I used to
and
love
that
show.
Crazy. And all these makeover shows. And I can't remember their names, but like they would undergo like so much surgery, like lipo, like dental work, like implants. And it was so they could be beautiful, the acceptable, you know, what we accepted as beauty back in like the early 2000s. And it was like, that's what we've seen. That's what I grew up with. That's the type of beauty that people told me was okay. So growing up with that and not knowing that you were internalizing a lot of issues about body image, when you now as an adult you have to learn how to unlearn those things. And I think a lot of people are scared to really look within themselves.
It's a lot to unpack
and like dismantle a lot of things that they've learned, and even talk about their own fat phobia. A lot of people don't want to.
They don't want to.
And
especially in medicine.
Yeah
and a lot of doctors as well. Like,
yeah,
I know quite a few that are like,
you go to them, if you're overweight, they'll say lose weight.
Yeah.
That's
and that is it.
That's it. And a lot, yeah, it's a big conversation that we have to have.
And I think we're only touching the surface with fat phobia.
Oh, absolutely.
I think we've barely even gone into it.
like even with the normalized normal bodies movement that I also kind of touched on in the book as well, it's a huge conversation.
Body dysmorphia is crazy. Absolutely crazy. For women, it's even more crazy. Like, and I can't speak for your experience or as a woman's experience, but for a man's experience, like, when I go on my discovery page on Instagram, every single one is jacked out to a whole new level. And it's crazy because our parents weren't looking at stuff like this.
Oh, absolutely not. My dad has never been to the gym.
Same, you know. And the thing is, my dad, you know, he wants to go to the gym. Like, we want him to go to the gym and just be active. Yeah. But you can't help someone who doesn't want to help themselves. And, you know, he does smoke a lot and et cetera, et cetera. And you're just like, you should go at least once.
Yeah, but just like, for health.
Just for health reasons or do something physically fit where you're active.
Yeah.
He just doesn't want to do it. Yeah. So you just can't force someone at this point. You actually can't force anybody. What was I going to say? The question got out of my head.
This body dysmorphia.
There we go.
Instagram explore page.
Yes. Oh, come on, notes. You are giving hair today, by the way.
Really?
This hair is beautiful.
Thank you.
It's actually beautiful. I came in, she was combing it. I'm like, okay, Rapunzel, let the hair down, baby. Let the hair down, Rapunzel. It looks absolutely gorgeous. Oh,
thank you.
As I was saying, you're seeing all these bodies jacked up and you're just like, and more time, some people have the ability to grow huge muscles because of genetics that does play into it. And of course, some people just started the gym very early. And so seeing this and then you compare it to yourself in the mirror, you think I'm not enough, whatever. But what pisses me off the most, and I want to just rant about this very quickly, is that there are so many PTs who are like, oh, you know, we're PTs or we'll do this, we'll help your body. But why are you not telling anybody that you've taken 5 steroids, 6 steroids? And that's why your arms are that big. And that's why your body's that big. And now you're lying, then that you can help your clients. But no, you can't help your clients to get to the point that you are at because they're not taking steroids like you did.
Yeah.
So it's such a facade.
But don't you think it's crazy that these PTs know that everyone wants to look like them?
Mm-hmm.
Don't you think it's crazy that there's just one standard?
It's a chain reaction.
And just one standard body type that's acceptable. That in itself is crazy.
It's a lot,
isn't
it?
That's a huge problem.
A huge issue, especially when it comes to dysmorphia, especially as a woman. Like you spoke about in your book in that chapter that I was able to read exclusively. And the lingerie shoots.
Yeah.
And, you know, your hair and people giving you all, you know, these orders in a very authoritative manner.
Yeah.
Were you the only one that, not... You weren't the only one that felt that way, but it's like, were you able to pick up on other people feeling that way like you did?
Yeah.
Because you also had overheard conversations of people not even eating
for
too long.
Definitely. I think that little section in that chapter, I remember the way I worded it, I was like really angry. Like there was just a little space where I felt like I had thin privilege. Mm. So to be writing and be like, ooh, I felt insecure, I felt this, I remember... I was like, I felt angry that I felt that way because I was like, here I am, someone with thin privilege talking about body issues. I felt so silly to even be writing that in the book. So the section you're referring to is I went to a photo shoot. It's for a brand. It was lingerie. And I absolutely hate lingerie shoots.
Really?
My agents. Oh, my God, I hate them so much. I hate posting lingerie pictures and videos. I absolutely hate them. And that day we had a shoot and some of the models were having conversations. I was minding my own business because they were models. I was just there as talent. I was there like an influencer talent and they were actual models.
So and comparing even more.
Yeah. And they were like, they were talking between themselves. Remember, I was holding food in my hand because I was starving. And they were like, yeah, I stopped eating yesterday at 4 p.m.
Not 4 p.m.
And I was on the shoot. It was midday at this point, and they looked great. And I was stood there, and I remember them just like looking at me and looking at the food in my hand, and just in shock of like, are you really going to eat that?
Mm.
And the whole experience. And I think there was a section I mentioned like the photographer taking a picture and how I referenced it as stealing secrets, because with each click it felt like he was showing the world everything that I was hiding. Because we've learned to post pictures that are airbrushed, that have been run through so many apps, and now here is someone who is taking my picture, is not going to airbrush it, and is going to put it out. And even though I should have been like happy and be like, yeah, like accepting normal bodies and this is normal and this is normal, because of the society we live in, I didn't feel like that. Mm. And I was angry that I didn't feel like that. I thought it was important to write.
I think it was very important to write. And then also, speaking about influencer events, I don't actually go to many because I just can't be bothered.
Oh, they are boring.
I just can't be bothered, man. Like, I just, you get the PR, they send you stuff or invites or whatever. Yeah. And I'm just like, okay, cool. I just dismiss the email because I'd rather just sit at home with my friends or go see my friends. Because when you go to these events, you have to put on a persona.
You do.
Or, you know, you have a lot of people speaking to you. You don't want to say anything wrong or, you know, come off in a negative way because then they will speak and run their circles around it. And it's just a lot for you to do. Mm. And then especially, you know, when you, I am quite visual. So when you were writing about how other people were saying stuff on a table, like the other girls were like, oh, you know, the trolls or the blackfishing, whatever. I just pictured people in my head.
So that's so funny because everyone who's read that chapter has said that, like, it's so vivid the way I write.
It's very vivid, especially someone like me who is very visual.
Yeah.
That's just how I learn. Yeah. Like, I don't have no... When I interview people, they're like, oh, Mara, at the end of the interview, they're like, Mara, you don't have any questions on you.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not seeing you. I'm like, I've written it all, but I've remembered it in a chain of events visually. Yeah. And that's just how I am. So I remember that part. It was very vivid, the way you wrote it, and relatable. Again, I've seen so many girls who are blackfishing. There were so many, even a few from Love Island. And I know that there are names that you may know that I may know as well, and you guys may know as well, that there are girls. It's like, you don't even need... The thing is, I don't know why people, girls, are white girls specifically are blackfishing, because you look beautiful.
Yeah.
You don't need to do that.
Yeah.
Like, you look great. So why are you darkening your skin so much to the point where it just looks odd?
Yeah.
I will never understand.
Yeah.
And then you got up with your drink and you walked away. I was laughing at that. I can tell you're very reserved as well, and you think more than you speak. Like, I feel like, because partially I'm also like that as well. So when you're seeing and hearing this nonsense, you're probably just getting up and walking away. Like, let me just leave this dinner. Like, how do you like react to stuff like that when you see it at... I'm sure you're going to many events when you came out of the show.
Yeah.
And of course, that's naturally, you know, you choose not to go to many.
Yeah.
How did you initially respond to stuff like that? Or did you just walk away?
I think that moment was the first time that I was... Because you see someone blackfishing, you don't really go up to them and be like, hey, you're blackfishing. You know what I mean? You don't...
I know you're doing that.
You see it a lot, but you don't really do you ever go to someone
right.
and have that specific conversation with them. But that at that event, it was different because the conversation was being had around the table. And because I was the only black person at that event, they looked at me for validation. It wasn't a, educate us about blackfishing and why we shouldn't be doing it. It was, oh, tell me I'm not doing it, right?
Mm.
You know, it was a different type of conversation. And that's why I chose to walk away in that instant. And that's why I wrote it the way I did, because then you could hear what I had to say in my head that I didn't say to that person because that's how I felt. So writing it that way is like, I hope if you are blackfishing and you do read this chapter, you can educate yourself on why. Because I think a lot of people, when they think about blackfishing, they think about, oh, I'm trying to be black. But that's That is not it. People take the literal interpretation and say, yeah, well, I'm not trying to be black. But I think blackfishing... there was like a quote that I put in that I really love. Obviously, I can't remember, but it's like, I think it ends with, it's like racist love because you choose what features you want to take from each race. Because blackfishing is not just taking features from black women. You're taking features from like Asian women. You're taking what you want to take while still remaining structurally white and like, you know, getting the benefits of being structurally white, but taking whatever features you want to playing, mixing it in like this little pot and just being this like racially ambiguous new person.
Right. I think there's that specifically that a lot of white girl influencers do as well. And then they also, there's so many that I know of in terms of seeing on reality shows that they really like black men.
Yeah.
And then they fetishize them.
Mm-hmm.
And then, or mixed race men, but specifically black men. And then they completely show so much attitude towards the black girls and don't care about them, find them to be rude, annoying, and whatever. But when it comes to the black men, they're just in awe. And I just find that so annoying. Like, it's so disrespectful on both ends.
Yeah.
And I feel like that's also a lot that I see. So when you spoke about blackfishing and other stuff, it made me think of other issues as well that I've seen on reality TV shows and in experiences, in terms of events or whatever. So it not only is it relatable, but it really makes you sit back and think about different things that really relate. So I mean that there were, that's what I mean by layers. There's so many layers that even once you read the chapter and close the book, you're still thinking about the layers.
That's great.
So that is what, like, when I was reading it yesterday and then like reading it again, I read it again this morning.
Did you?
Yeah.
Not reading it twice.
I know, I read it twice. I read it twice. I was just like reading it through and whatever. I was, because I read quite fast. I was reading it. And then it just, and then you're like, you've closed the chapter now and you're on the tube or like in the taxi, whatever. And you're just thinking about it again.
Yeah.
Like certain layers. Oh, you think, oh, this is what you want to talk about. But then what about this as well? And then this happens as well. And this happens. It's like a tree.
Yeah.
A branch for me. So it came to so much.
Yeah.
So I just thought that was very intriguing in terms
I
of
love that you have like open tabs, because all the little open tabs are like answered in other chapters.
Yes, interesting. Yeah. Okay, did you ever get writer's block?
Oh my god. Oh, I'll never I don't think anyone actually knows the struggle. Like, I remember messaging my editor and saying there needs to be a support group for writers. Surely there actually has to be a support group where you just go out, you vent, because it was hell. There was days that like I would sit in the office for 9 to 12 hours and nothing, probably write like words at the max, and I'd be so frustrated. And there was days that like I would leave the office, walk around the block and just cry because I had a deadline. Like, apart from writing, yeah, I had a full-time job.
Right, you're walking around the block just crying.
Yeah.
That is a lot.
Face mask on. Sad music in my headphones.
Sad music playlist.
Cute sad music. And I would just cry because I felt like sometimes I needed to let out that frustration.
Right.
And as a writer, there's nothing worse than having writer's block, because you don't know how I didn't know how to get over it. I just had to wait for either the time to pass or go out. Because sometimes I would go out and get inspo. I remember I went out with my friend Will and we were having dinner and I just had something, and I asked the waiter to give me a pen and a notepad, and I was just writing. And I still have that piece of paper because I keep it with me and I smile every time I read it. And it was the opening of my friendship chapter, and I just started writing in the restaurant. And he thought I was crazy. He came back and he was like, "What the fuck are you doing?"
Sometimes it just comes like that.
Yeah.
Interesting. Yeah. Yeah, I get that in a weird way. I mean, when I was very young, 11, 12, I wrote a lot of poetry. Yeah, I know.
Not,
people are like,
poet.
People get very like confused. Like, well, you have poetry. Or well, like,
I'll give you a little exclusive. There is some poetry in my book.
Oh, really? Mm-hmm. Interesting. Is it about a special someone? No, I'm joking.
Not a special someone. Please.
Looking out to the window, on the bed, moving your legs up and down, just writing your poetry. I'm screaming. That's what I just thought. Okay, come on, poetry. Yeah, I used to write a lot of poetry when I was a young kid. I remember, I think I had a very rough childhood. So subconsciously, I used to write a lot.
Yeah.
And that was my way of pouring out. And I think to myself now, why was I doing that all the time? And I used to write songs and poetry. And if I ever got writer's block, I remember one time I was in the toilet and randomly my writer's block went. And I was just writing on the piece of tissue paper.
Yeah.
Like, because back in the day, like, I had like, what, a Sony Ericsson. You can't really be writing notes on that. But like, I was writing on toilet paper so much and I just couldn't stop. And I was thinking, when it just comes, it just comes. Yeah. If you ever have writer's block.
Yeah.
Here and there. But of course, the book is very different to poetry now. Like, I'm not Shakespeare, but still, like, a book is very, very different. So, Reclaiming.
Reclaiming.
I think it was a great name. How did that name come about?
Ugh. Hours and hours of meetings, and I think what happened was we had a spreadsheet and we would, for 2 weeks, we would throw in loads of names. So it was me, my editor, and my book agent in the spreadsheet, and we threw in different names for, I'm pretty sure one day on my stories I'll probably just put a screenshot of what it would have been called, and we put it in for 3 weeks, and I didn't jump at Reclaiming. I actually didn't come up with the name. I can't remember what names I threw in. They were obviously really bad. That's why we thing happened. But something about it was initially it was called Reclaim.
Right, okay.
Reclaim. And then I didn't like it as it was. And then I was like, what about reclaiming? And we weren't sure. And we pondered on it for a couple of days and we came back and everyone was like, no, like it makes sense. And when I was writing the book, it made so much sense because what we said was, if we put out Reclaiming, and when you were writing the book, they said to me, if you feel like you needed to change it, what we can do is we could add on to like the name Reclaiming.
Interesting.
So when I started writing the book, and you'll see it in a few chapters, especially my racialized renaming and other chapters, I end up using the word Reclaiming a lot of times in the book, and it made sense.
It just made sense because obviously you just, there's like a thread.
Yeah.
You're writing it a lot.
Yeah.
You did talk about dilution of culture.
Yeah.
And I want to head back to that because that is very important. Like, I find it hard to cook some of my like ethnic food.
Yeah.
And then you're really passing that down. Yeah. You're passing that down to, I know it's so bad.
Yeah.
And like, even my Arabic is like shway shway, which means a little. So my Arabic isn't even that great. So that in itself is a big problem as well. So I'm sure you do deal with dilution of culture, but like, how do you combat that?
I think for me, I, through the years, not me using my title of my book, I've learned to reclaim.
She planned that.
I've learned to reclaim a lot of it back because I think it started first with language.
Mm.
Because I used to say to myself, like, oh my God, imagine like getting married and having kids, if I did have kids and if I did get married, that my children, I wouldn't be able to speak to them in Yoruba. I centuries going down, I would dilute. I'd be diluting the culture. A lot of people now in the UK and in Ireland, a lot of Nigerians who are Yoruba, don't know how to speak the language.
Mm.
Like, I've met someone who has said, oh no, I don't understand it at all. And I found it mind-blowing.
Yeah.
I found it crazy. Can you imagine in 200-300 years time,
it's so bad.
What it would be like.
It's so bad for our generation.
Sad. It's really sad.
Because our mothers and fathers, they moved countries.
Yeah.
So they had that with them because they were born there.
Yeah.
But for us and future generations, it's really, really bad.
So I've started mixing my English. Now when I'm speaking to my friends who are Nigerian and who are Yoruba and understand the language, I've started mixing my English with Yoruba to get me used to speaking the language. I can understand it fluently. There's nothing you can say that I won't understand. But speaking, completely different. Genre. But now I have started mixing it with my English. Cultural foods, I'm really good at cooking it. I eat a lot of Nigerian dishes.
Amazing.
Absolutely love them.
Amazing.
My friends used to laugh at me because I actually used to hate eating like European food. They're like, you can't take you anywhere.
That's refreshing. It's really refreshing that you don't like European food.
No, I don't.
Because everybody out here is doing that pasta and burger.
Oh, it's not for me.
Every day, quick fry, burger, fish and chips.
No, sorry.
And although I love fish and chips, there obviously are many other things.
I haven't eaten fish and chips since I've been here.
I love fish and chips.
I don't know what people's problem is with fish and chips, you know.
My only issue is that sometimes they batter it in beer and I don't drink alcohol. So I have to ask them to take the beer out. Because why must everything be in alcohol? I don't understand.
That's crazy.
Like, it's just, and even the word alcohol is an Arabic word.
I didn't know that.
It's an Arabic word, even though we don't even drink alcohol. It's just, and even in our culture, we don't cheers. Because there's no word for it.
True.
So we don't actually cheers. Just for it. I don't know why I'm talking about that, but I'm going off. Culture and like just in intriguing stuff. Now we're gonna put Reclaim in to a side, put that to a side, and not only is Yewande a content creator and an author, but she is a radio TV presenter as well.
Oh my God.
Like, I feel like you've done so well since you came on the show. You've been very you know, accomplished.
Yeah.
Not to me to add fuel to the fire of this rat race, because I feel like there's such a rat race, they have to compare everything and et cetera. It's really, really bad.
Yeah.
And even if you want to go home after Love Island and call it a day, not see anyone, absolutely fine.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like people, including me, used to put up this, oh, this person's doing this, why isn't this doing that? And it's such an unhealthy discussion to have. But a whole radio TV presenter with Will. I love Will.
I love him.
He's such a nice breath of fresh air.
Yeah, but he's so annoying sometimes. We went to the BAFTAs after party, and can you believe he left me?
To go where?
I do not know. I was the last person at the venue, and then he calls me at 10:45 in the morning. Did you get home okay? I could have been dead.
This guy must have gone to like 5 after parties after the BAFTA after party. This guy is busy on books.
I could have been dead. Oh, Will, no, he's annoying, but I love him. But yeah, we have a Capital Extra radio show podcast, which is great because I want to start presenting. So having that show was probably the best like
foothold.
Yeah, to, you know, to test the waters, get my foot in there. And we've got to interview like amazing people. Which helps when, you know, it's Capital Extra, people do kind of say yes.
Yeah, I can imagine. But interviewing on the show, how did the show even come about?
So me and Will have been friends for a long time, actually. And we are on the phone all the time and we're always laughing, talking. And he was like, we should actually do a podcast.
Right.
And I was like, no. I was like, who the hell's gonna buy that? Like, who are we going to present this to?
Right.
And he was like, leave it with me. Like, he was like, no, I think I can sell this to Capital Extra. And then he did. He came back. We had meetings after meetings, and they were like, yeah, we want to do this. And I said, if you say so.
Not Will's magic hand. Just go, yeah, what's gonna do?
Yeah.
Will, do you enjoy interviewing other people as well? Like, was it a challenge at first?
At first, I was so nervous because obviously Will has so much like presenting.
Right, there's a difference.
Oh, there is a huge difference. He's like here and I'm like here.
But I think that balances it out.
It does. It does. And it depends on what guest we have because he's really good when it comes to like reality TV. Like he's really good at interviewing guests like that. But I'm really good at interviewing like people in like pop culture, like in the music scene. I'm more comfortable and I think I know a few of the guests as well on the personal level, so it's easier. It's like having a conversation.
Right, it's fluid.
Yeah, it's fluid. But yeah, it's a nice balance as well. But I really enjoy speaking to people. It's different and you learn a lot from speaking to different type of people. And I like presenting.
Right, I think it definitely suits you. Like I've seen some of the interviews on YouTube when it gets suggested and everything, and I feel like it's just both of you fit well.
Oh, thank you.
And I feel like that is very important to a show that you're just going like
up and down.
not as up and down, but as in you're both have different energies.
Yeah.
And when you come together, it definitely fits. So I think you definitely had a great idea.
Yeah.
And I feel like you two are doing well. So you've had clothing collections come out.
I have.
You've had, you know, this book that's dropped. You have a radio. Like you just seems to be very, very busy with what you're doing. Do you have anything else in store or are you keeping it very locked in?
I do, but I'm keeping it locked in. It's something that I've been working on for a really long time.
Ooh, not a long time.
No, like this is a long time.
Okay, this sounds...
And it's something that I'm doing myself. It's like my own first like solo project. And it was very important for me to do it on my own. Because I think in this industry, like everyone wants to have a piece of you and everyone wants to do something with you. And I suppose if we're being honest, it's all about money. Like everyone wants a piece of you so they can make as much money off you as possible. And I think I was just like, fuck that shit. And I was just so sick of it. And I wanted to do something that was mine. So yeah, I'm going to be starting something, a little project. I don't want to say when because dates are always changing.
Right.
But
it
will be soon-ish. The book took a lot of my time, so I kind of had to put it on hold. But now we're back working. It's going to be announced soon-ish. And I'm excited for it.
I feel like you just give the it girl vibes.
Do I? Stop.
Like you do. I feel like, no, I'm thinking about it now. Even when you are on your show, I just feel like people are always talking about you. Or the Islanders had different opinions about you and different stuff. And I'm just like, everybody is just, it's given obsession. That's what it's given.
Oh my God, do you know what song came into my head? Do you know Britney Spears? You want a piece of
me? Yeah, yes. I love that song.
Same.
And the way she was just like in casual wear. She wasn't even in like amazing. Just like top to head up with sunglasses and we're just doing. That's what I felt like it was. But then when it comes back to like Love Island stuff to an extent, but I just feel like everybody just wanted to talk about you. It was a piece of you. It was just given obsession. Like Mariah Carey, why are you so obsessed with me? That's what it was really giving me. where people had their own theses, like their home flipping PhDs on like points of what you should have done or what should have happened. And there were other islanders as well, I believe, or other people who would refuse to say your name or, you know, go on their lives and joke around and whatever. And I'm just like, everybody is just obsessed. They just clearly, you have the it factor when it comes to Love Island, and we just post that. And I feel like you've done so well for yourself.
Thank you.
So you should definitely be proud of yourself. I feel like you look stunning as well.
Thank you.
And to be honored with the presence of Yuande.
Not the Fiala. Presence. Not I'm the honored presence. To be sitting here.
Yeah, I know. When I was saying Yuande babes, was any part of you thinking, this guy does not shut up? Like, this guy just always...
No,
if I hear this one more time...
I loved it because other people started saying it. First, it was just you. But when other people started saying it, I said, this is a movement.
Yeah.
Like, this is a whole ass movement.
You were the first islander where I had like catchphrases. And now that has... I'm sorry, I'm saying other catchphrases for other islanders as well. But you were the first, baby.
Not the first.
You were the first. Yuande was the first when it comes to actually creating a name for you and everything, and everybody started saying it, and it just, that was like the first season that I started reviewing properly.
Yeah.
And I just felt like you, it was a movement. I enjoyed you on the show, and thank you so much for coming on.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
I think it was a good interview. I feel like it's gone on, how has it been, over an hour?
Oh, Jesus, Lord,
an hour and a half, guys, with Miss Yuande Biala. Thank you so much for coming on.
Thanks for having me.
I appreciate it. And guys, the book Reclaiming is out now. Do you understand? When we say out now, we should like just drop the lights. Just like we're on X Factor. It's out now, guys. The link is in the bio.
Pre-order
the book, guys. Is it
so
only on Amazon or is it on other?
It's on Amazon. It's going to be on Easton's, Waterstone, WH Smith, literally.
Amazing.
I will send you the link tree.
Send me the whole link tree.
Yeah.
And then I'll put that in the bio below. So if you don't have Amazon...
Plenty. Get Amazon. Who doesn't have Amazon in 2022?
I know.
That's crazy.
It is actually crazy. But have you been in... Do you go to bookshops? I used to go to Waterstones a lot when I was a kid.
I used to go to Easton's, but Easton's is in Ireland.
Right.
I used to go to Easton's a lot.
Your accent is still very strong.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, I don't
think
so funny.
I don't think... What do people say it isn't?
If people say that it's watered down a little bit.
No, I don't think it's watered down at all. I don't feel like you sound that different to when you're on the show.
Really?
Yeah. Oh, but you only say like true or like...
But it's mad because then when I go to Ireland and I'm speaking to my friends, I hear it's it gets stronger.
Right, that makes sense. That makes complete sense. Like you just start saying different words and whatever.
Yeah.
Your English is this. There's an Irish black guy thing on this new season.
Yes, there is, yeah.
His name is Dami.
Yeah.
I think. So that's going to be intriguing as well to see. But I just love the Irish accent.
Do you?
Yeah, I actually do. It's a nice accent.
A lot of people do.
Huh?
But I don't... It depends where in Ireland you go. Some places don't have the best...
Screaming.
Accents.
What would you say the best accent in the UK? And Ireland.
In the UK, I actually like London, but I know it's split up. There's a lot
There's
of different...
There's too many in London.
Yeah. But I think the generic London accent is really nice.
Right.
In Ireland, Dublin is nice, but depends where in Dublin you go to.
Right. And you're from Dublin?
No, I'm from Meath.
Meath. Okay.
Yeah, I'm
sorry,
from Meath.
I have no idea what Meath is. Yeah. And I know.
I think if you're like near like D4, like Dunboyne and stuff, like it's really nice accent. But if you go down to, personally for me, do not attack me. If you go down to like the Tala and like the city centre in Dublin, I think it's a bit... too strong for me.
Oh really? Yeah. interesting. Well, before we go, guys, we're gonna just run with this story, by the way. Before we go, guys, you wanted to...
oh
cookies?
My god. Yeah. So what happened was I got out of the station, I went to a store called, I can't remember,
and she loved me and bought cookies. The end, guys. That's the story.
Yeah, basically
she's like, Murad, wow,
here's the cookies.
Oh my days. No, but tell the story, please.
So I went to the store to actually just pee, and I came out of the bathroom and some... God, that's a big cookie.
That is huge.
Some guy was...
Who
like...
Who took a bite out of it?
You did.
Yeah, it was me.
Some guy was like, here's some food. And I was like, no, I didn't order anything. I just went to the toilet. And he was like, no, you have to take them, because if you don't take them, we'll throw it away. It's for you. And I just didn't want him to throw it in the bin. So I was like, okay, I'll take it.
I just can't get over that.
And here we are.
Cookies for you. You were meant to be here. This is destined. It's not cookies for you. That was so funny. And brownies too.
Oh, did he give you brownies?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Do you like brownies?
No.
Oh, the way you're saying that, I thought you liked it.
No, for you.
Oh, thank you. Thank you, one day. I really appreciate it. Okay, the sound engineer guy is sick of me. Like, so let me wrap this up. But anyways, guys, you one day babes. Can you just say it for me, please?
You one day babes.
Yeah. Thank you so much for gracing your presence. Coming on the Murad Murad podcast. Daily and consistent, guys. Inject it. The new season of Love Island is coming on soon. And you reclaiming the book, you can pre-order it now. The links are below. Please go and get it. I would appreciate it. That chapter that I read was amazing. And there's so many more. So definitely go and pre-order. Thank you for coming.
Thanks for having me, honestly.
No worries. Anytime, you one day. And we'll catch you guys soon for another podcast.
Bye.
Can you sing?
Can I sing a little bit?
Can you actually?
Wait. No,
things. No. Don't even try to stop that. One day you can sing.
I can, yeah.
Okay, say my name. Okay, I'm not. I know it's not my name. Sorry. Not my name. Not like that. But the song Destiny's Child. Can you sing that? I mean, reclaiming. Say my name.
I am like, not singing on this podcast. Can you imagine? Absolutely not.
Yeah, for a second you were thinking about singing.
No, I was not. Not really? On this podcast. Absolutely.
Really?
Yeah.